General Seryodov surveyed the massacre. The fences were torn down, and the prisoners had run amok. 17 of his incompetent guards were dead, killed not by Superman or that other costumed intruder, but by the pathetic Gulag slaves themselves. Seryodov would not be reporting that detail to Moscow. He had a lot of cleaning up to do, and he would need to request an entirely new complement of political prisoners from party headquarters. Much had to be accounted for. And unless he recaptured Superman, he would never convince Lex Luthor to provide him with the superior power reactor he needed.
What is this now?
The five lumbering mutants approached.
Guards, stand ready!
The surviving guards stood with him, holding their Kalashnikovs ready.
I told you to capture two people! Where are they?
The creatures looked uneasily at the armed guards.
Well?
Seryodov lashed out with his whip. The whip's end sliced a deep cut that oozed green blood. The second lash failed to touch any skin, and Dovyek caught the end of the whip in his massive fist and yanked so hard that he nearly dislocated Seryodov's shoulder. The mutants attacked. Leaving his guards to their fate, Seryodov ran. He raced into his headquarters building and threw the wooden door shut. Inside the fenced and isolated gulag, he had never needed a particularly sturdy lock. The door splintered and flew inward like a hailstorm of kindling. One of the thick walls was literally torn apart as huge hands ripped the logs away. Part of the building collapsed, crushing the pot-bellied stove in the corner. Seryodov dove for the lone window on the opposite side. The window was barely large enough for him to squeeze through, but he did. He fell onto the dirt and a patch of hard snow outside. Behind him, Dubrov jammed his massive head and shoulder through the window. But Seryodov was already running across the compound. The soldiers' barracks and the prisoners' quarters were even flimsier constructions than his headquarters. They would offer no viable shelter. He needed to get to the reactor control room and the containment building. Those were the sturdiest structures in the gulag. He flung open the steel door of the reactor building and slammed it behind him. The control room held a set of gray metal stations, each with a cathode ray tube displaying black and white images from the adjacent reactor room. A constellation of dials, gauges, and black bakelite knobs covered the walls. The Soviets had once been so proud of this program. In June 1954, the peaceful atom facility in Omsk had been the world's first nuclear plant to generate electricity. Many more of the graphite-moderated power reactors had been built across the Soviet Union. This one was much smaller, an experimental design that not only powered the Gulag, but provided many radioactive isotopes for Soviet nuclear research. Now, Seryodov hoped, it would offer him the protection he needed. He began to wonder whether the control room might be more trap than shelter. He had no way out other than through the large bulkhead door into the reactor chamber itself. With the reactor running so high, the radiation levels inside would be lethal. Bolts popped from the steel door's hinges, and a huge, blunt-fingered hand pushed its way through, bending the door further. At the control bank, Seryodov tried to shut down the reactor.
It will take too long.
It was a water-cooled reactor, filled with boiling liquid that pumped out high-pressure steam. Graphite moderators surrounded the fuel rods, and thick hot pipes circulated the steam through turbines. Even the heavy lead shielding wouldn't be sufficient to protect him.
Better than to be torn apart.
He ran to the hatch and activated the emergency releases. Fortunately, the Gulag's engineers hadn't bothered to install safety systems or protective interlocks. Just as Seryodov opened the bulkhead, the monsters smashed through the main door. Seryodov stumbled into the reactor chamber and swung the bulkhead door shut behind him. The air inside the reactor chamber had a sizzling, steamy humidity. Seryodov tried desperately to recall if there was a second exit. He knew the radiation was all around him, ripping into his cells, poisoning him. If he could move quickly enough. One of the creatures tore the bulkhead door off its hinges and hurled it into the reactor chamber. It smashed the nested coolant pipes, shattering them. Geysers of steam erupted from pipe breaches, and reactor fluid levels began to drop. as boiling water rushed out of the containment vessel. In the control room, all the gauges must have been well into the red, but the mutants were oblivious. They knocked loose pressure control wheels, smashed lights, waded forward into the thickening radioactive steam. Their skin seemed to be rotting now, burned and scabbed, beginning to fall off. Saryadov could barely see through the steam and flashing red lights. Bathed in radiation, he knew he was already dead.
Well, well. What have you found now, Bertram?
Lois pulled her arm free. The armored gauntlets were strong enough to crush granite, but they weren't particularly nimble.
So is this a new subsidiary of Luther Corp? I must have missed the ribbon-cutting ceremony.
You like to trespass, don't you, Miss Lane? You really must learn to respect personal boundaries.
I certainly don't respect you. The whole world has seen Superman in chains, but what they don't know is how you orchestrated it. He's a hero. He saved countless lives.
A hero.
You're jealous of him, aren't you?
Why on earth would I be jealous of a Soviet prisoner?
Are you denying your involvement?
Of course not. I'd just like to know how you made the connection.
I'm not going to make it easier for you to cover your tracks.
Superman. He's like a movie star for young girls to swoon over. James Dean, Jeffrey Hunter, Marlon Brando. It's pathetic. People forget who's really helped them the most. Trust me, Miss Lane, I haven't even gotten started with Superman. But I am pleased that General Saryadov has detained him.
Saryadov? How do you spell that so I can get his name correct in my article?
There won't be any article. Now that Superman has been incapacitated by exposure to the green mineral, we can study him. Dissection should prove that he is in fact an alien, different from anyone else on Earth.
He's already admitted that, and he's come to help us. The world needs Superman.
How can an investigative reporter be so gullible? Wake up, Miss Lane. No one plays the hero without ulterior motives. It's inconceivable.
Not to someone with a soul.
He's powerful and he's hiding something, and that makes him dangerous.
You're far more dangerous than he is, Lex Luthor, and far less human.
You really care about him, don't you, Miss Lane? Like a little lovesick schoolgirl.
Lois didn't respond, which was itself an answer.
We have an arrangement, Saryadov and I. Soon Superman will be turned over to my researchers. Think of the possible scientific breakthroughs that could be made by peeling him apart. Not to mention the wealth it'll bring in.
He saved our country from a Soviet missile launch!
Superman is accountable to no one, Miss Lane. It would be the greatest folly for the United States to rely on a man who might change his mind on a whim. Luther Corp, on the other hand, is creating reliable technology that won't be swayed by emotions. You've seen these new battle suits. Powerful defenses that can be used by anyone duly placed in command.
Someone like yourself?
There are more pressing threats than you realize, Miss Lane. Your own newspaper has failed to report on the most important danger to the people of Earth. The communists are a red herring, as you will soon see. I intend to prove to the world that I am their real protector, not Superman.
What could possibly be a bigger threat than the communists? They've already launched 3 nuclear missiles at us.
Such a disappointing lack of imagination. Bertram, keep Miss Lane in one of our guest cells for the time being. I won't waste any possible resource. Superman has already demonstrated an affection for her, and she obviously loves him. Once General Saryadov sends his prisoner here, perhaps Miss Lane's presence will convince him not to resist our investigations.
I won't do it, Luther. I refuse to cooperate.
Why, Miss Lane? Who said your cooperation was required?
It'll be crowded, but there's room inside for 2. You're not in any shape to fly yet.
As Kal-El climbed into the sleek aircraft, Batman stowed the cycle in the fuselage undercarriage, then swung into the cockpit. Sealing the canopy, he activated the controls.
We'll be gone before the Soviets know what hit them.
With a burst from the vertical launch boosters, the plane lifted straight into the air, then leapt forward, climbing steeply. Pushed deep into his seat by the acceleration, Kal-El looked back down at the gulag as the plane soared into the night. There was no way he could have saved all those helpless political prisoners. but he vowed to come back. Then there was a blinding flash, followed by a searing, roiling shockwave. Kal-El strained to see through the dancing black spots in his vision. Batman clenched his gauntleted hands around the controls, holding the plane against the sudden buffeting. The plane shuddered as it tried to outrace the shock front that tossed them about. Batman took the jet into a near vertical climb, not leveling off until he had finally escaped the spreading storm.
It's gone. The quarry, the gulag, the barracks buildings. Everything wiped out.
Including the meteor.
Including any prisoners that were left alive.
There was nothing we could have done.
They flew onward in silence, both lost in thought. Kal-El knew the other man was right, but he was simply not accustomed to failure, to being so helpless. Though the debilitating weakness was dissipating, Kal-El knew that he needed to heal as much as he needed to understand what had happened to him. He didn't want to return to Metropolis until his powers were restored, not until he had a better grasp of what had happened to him. Luthor had possessed one sample of the green Araguska mineral. How many more hunks of the glowing rock were out there?
Let me guide you. There's a special place up in the Arctic. We can stop there to rest.
You have a secret base?
A fortress. My fortress of solitude. I usually fly there on my own, but I'll show it to you. I trust you.
Now you've piqued my curiosity.
The black plane soared into the uncharted polar wilderness, cruising over white wastelands of unconquered terrain and twisting frozen rivers. Kal-El was uneasy. He'd never taken anyone here before, but he had made up his mind. Dawn had painted eerie blood-orange light across the rough ice fields by the time Kal-El guided them to the isolated range of glacier-covered mountains. Even from a great distance, he spotted the latticework of interlaced white crystal shafts. The gigantic angled spires formed an incredible alien palace at the base of a sheer icy cliff. As new daylight reflected through the crystal faces, Batman found a place to land on the broad ice field. The plane dropped on its vertical thrusters, surrounded by spiraling whirls of ice and snow, kicked up by the engine blasts. Batman had proven himself a man of few words, but he was utterly silent now. Kal-El pretended not to notice, but he marked the plane's position on his cockpit log. When they emerged, the air was intensely cold. Kal-El was impervious to the freezing temperatures, but he knew that Batman, even with his incredible suit and devices, was still just a man. But Batman stood with his dark boots planted, his cape rippling around him in the Arctic wind. He didn't seem to be in any hurry to get to shelter as he stared at the amazing facade of the Fortress of Solitude.
I'm not easily impressed, Superman, but this does the job.
Out in the Arctic wilderness, where no spy planes or prying eyes would find it, Superman had erected a structure that surpassed anything Bruce Wayne had ever seen. An alien cathedral built from clear crystal shards and white pillars. Though the polar air seemed cold enough to break stone, the glowing light emanating from the fortress's crystals made the interior crackle with life and heat. In the center of the primary chamber, where the prismatic spires focused the wan sunlight, Superman seemed to be in his element, drawing power from the sun itself.
This is what remains of my home planet Krypton. This is how I learned what little I know of my origin, my past, and my real parents.
I read Lois Lane's interview with you in the Daily Planet. I know what you claim to be. I just never believed it.
Superman touched a green crystal. A misty cloud of turbulent air formed in the vaulted chamber, and the image of a white-haired man's face appeared within it.
That's my father, Jor-El, Krypton's greatest scientist. He predicted the end of our planet, warned the Kryptonian Council, but he was defeated by politics, incompetence, and complacency. A dictator named Zod was his downfall, but the people of Krypton were responsible for the end of their own world.
He touched another crystal, an amber one this time. A beautiful woman appeared, and Superman gazed at her wistfully.
My mother, Lara. I was just a baby when they placed me in a small ship and launched me into space, daring to believe that I might reach Earth and find a home here. As far as I know, I'm the last survivor of Krypton.
A child, all alone. A memory shuddered through Bruce. Another set of lost parents. Blood in an alley. In other crystalline alcoves, mirrors vibrated and displayed scenes of an amazing planet. Racing chariots drawn by ugly iguana-like creatures Volcanoes spewing red lava tinged with green, incredible tidal waves, a magnificent city protected by a shimmering dome.
My real name, my Kryptonian name, is Kal-El.
So, when you were an infant, your ship landed here on Earth, somewhere in America? Where? And more important, when?
You want me to tell you everything? Are you willing to give up your own secrets, Batman?
I'm trying to add up the time frame. The Arakuska meteor impact occurred in June 1938, and you happen to have very adverse reactions to exposure to that meteorite. If my guess is correct, your spaceship landed on Earth at approximately the same time.
Yes. Yes, it did. Are you suggesting that the Arakuska meteor and those green rocks are radioactive fragments of Krypton?
It's a possibility.
But why would a rock from my home planet have such a profound effect on me? Why would it? How could it drain my power?
I didn't say I could offer an explanation. It's difficult for me to believe, yet impossible to deny. You aren't from Earth, you're an alien. Have you heard Senator McCarthy's accusations?
The United States is my country, my home. I'm here to help. Being an adopted son does not make me any less loyal. I will defend our way of life and protect people from man-made dangers and natural disasters alike. I use my strength and skills to benefit mankind, as you seem to do, Batman. I was suspicious of you at first because of your tactics, but I now believe you do fight on the side of the law.
I fight on the side of justice. Justice and the law aren't always the same. I do what's necessary to prevent crime, to stop criminals, to save the innocent.
But without the law, we have no civilization. And without civilization, there's anarchy. People can't just write their own laws according to how they feel.
Right and wrong isn't always black and white, Kal-El. Isn't there a difference between a criminal who steals purely out of greed and a desperate father who steals a loaf of bread for his family?
That would depend on if the father hurt or killed someone. Does it give any consolation to a grieving widow that the murderer had a good reason for committing his crime?
Batman wrestled with a question in his mind, remembering one desperate thief with a gun, hiding in the alley by Park Row. Had that man been desperate for money to feed his family, or maybe to buy medicine for a sick baby? It was doubtful, but even if the man had had understandable motives, it wouldn't bring Thomas and Martha Wayne back from the dead.
I watched President Eisenhower give you the Medal of Freedom. I know that was a great moment for you, but leaders aren't perfect. Political power and wealth can corrupt any man, no matter where he's born. A man like Lex Luthor can steal more money with a stroke of a pen than 100 petty criminals can with their guns.
He looked up at Superman.
Which is more important, stopping a small-time thief or battling corrupt leaders?
The world looks to us as heroes. We have to do both.
Jimmy Olsen didn't know what to do, and he had nobody to talk to. Clark Kent had chosen a particularly bad time for an extended visit to his hometown back in Kansas. Lois Lane had flown off to interview Wernher von Braun and his team of rocket scientists, but Mr. White was furious that she hadn't called to check in. The other reporters in the planet's bullpen were in a feeding frenzy with so many major stories to choose from. But Jimmy was most worried about Superman. Tensions remained high between the U.S. and the Soviet Union, and no new footage had been shown of the captive hero in more than a day. Jimmy'd never felt so upset and helpless. He didn't think the situation could get any worse until a huge alien battleship appeared in the skies above Metropolis.
Oh my gosh.
Jimmy stared up at the sky, transfixed. A black shadow crossed over the street, like the edge of an eclipse. The angular battleship was studded with sharp spikes and gun barrels. Jagged, unearthly lettering marked its hull plates in garish copper red. Arcs of blue-white electricity sparked from the spear-like prongs, traveling upward like a Jacob's ladder from Dr. Frankenstein's laboratory. Then Jimmy remembered.
My camera!
Overhead, like sentries taking position, four more incredible alien craft joined the primary battleship, looming above the Metropolis skyline. Jimmy had seen enough movies to know exactly what was happening.
It's an invasion. From Mars, or maybe even someplace worse.
The space invaders had found a way to break into all television and radio signals. Shuddering in horror, people gathered around a display model of a new television set in an appliance store window. The alien leader's face was a mass of roiling tentacles. It had a single glowing gelatinous eye in the middle of its warty forehead.
The planet you call Earth. dominion. Surrender or be destroyed. We have monitored your radio broadcasts in order to learn your language. We have no interest in dialogue. You will hear only our demands. All inhabitants of Earth are now our slaves. Cooperate, and we may allow some of you to live. If we do not receive your unconditional surrender within 1 hour, we will level your cities one by one.
Oh my gosh, with Superman captured, who can possibly save Earth now?
Fellow citizens of Earth, this is Lex Luthor. I am broadcasting from an undisclosed location so that I can complete my vital task without interference from the alien invaders. Many of you know my achievements. I am a man who does what is necessary, and I must do so again. President Eisenhower, do not fear, sir. America is safe. The world is safe. Luthor Corp is on your side. Know this, alien commander. The human race will never bow to invaders. Earth is our planet, and we are its proud people. Free people who will never be your slaves. You will wish you had never come here.
One of the tallest buildings in Metropolis was the main headquarters of Luthor Corp. Now, rooftop panels on the Luthor Corp building slid aside, and towering dish transmitters rose up on hydraulic platforms, directed energy cannons of the same type that should have vaporized the Soviet missiles that had destroyed Sputnik once the sabotaged components were repaired.
Behold what Luthor Corp can do! What humans can do! Open fire!
Luthor's directed energy projectors targeted the primary battleship. Lancing rays blasted the huge interstellar engines, ripping a gaping wound along the armored hull and blackening the bizarre alien inscriptions. Explosions ripped through the interior of the alien ship, blowing out bulkheads and spewing white-hot flame through the split hull. Like a wounded animal, the invader's command ship lumbered across the sky, trailing plumes of black smoke as it tried to flee. The vessel reeled out of control over Metropolis, traveling just far enough to clear the center of the city, and plunged into the bay. Then the battleship vaporized in a white-hot flash. A pillar of fire and steam shot high into the air. Luthor didn't think President Eisenhower would complain about what he had done, but it wouldn't do for the rest of the fleet to go down so easily. The giant alien ships, vengeful now, swooped down upon the city. The air in his lungs felt bracing as he streaked along at top speed, and Kal-El's muscles sang with renewed energy. Now that his powers had returned, his vision was filled with details seen across the entire spectrum with an intensity that made the whole world seem new. He was Kal-El, he was Superman, and he was back. Racing behind him like a night-camouflaged predator, the Batplane nearly kept up with him. Superman slowed just enough so that the two could fly in parallel. Metropolis lay just ahead. Superman listened in on the radio band, picking up panic transmissions from around the world. Batman had his own receivers inside the cockpit. Both men had learned of the astonishing alien invasion. With Metropolis threatened by giant interstellar battleships, Superman's inclination was to charge in and rescue humanity. Batman, though, wanted to understand the threat first. He opened the frequency that connected him to Superman, who wore a compact listening device that Batman had produced from his remarkable utility belt.
I've seen your fortress, Kal-El, and I'm convinced that you aren't from Earth. But forgive me if I remain skeptical about this alien invasion. Something isn't right.
They shot forward and got a look at the gigantic alien battleships that hovered over the city, preparing to fire their exotic weapons. The largest ship had just crashed and exploded in Metropolis Bay. The remainder of the invasion fleet had powered up ominous weapons to commence their retaliatory attack. Fracking discharges spat out of the pronged weapons and blew the roof off a skyscraper, set a second tall building on fire, blasting out windows and filling the interior with poisonous black smoke. As the first three ships continued to strike, another group of five flying saucers arrived to join the attacking force. Streaking closer, Kal-El focused his intense gaze into the infrared band, and heat beams lashed out, strafing the underbelly of the lowest flying alien craft. Immediately adjacent to him, the Batplane launched a brace of small rockets, knocking out the weapons clusters on the jagged noses of two other alien craft.
They're not as powerful as they look. That one's going down.
I've got it.
As Superman dove in to catch the reeling, out-of-control vessel, he focused his X-ray vision and peered inside the gigantic craft.
Great Scott.
It was completely empty. Nothing more than an exotically decorated metallic shell, born on a sophisticated propulsion system. A larger-scale version of the Luthercorp prototype he had seen in Area 51. He caught the hollow ship and hefted it like an empty wrapper.
They're not real. There are no aliens aboard.
I thought that might be the case. These aren't spacecraft. They're props. Empty constructs.
This is a scam. Lex Luthor scam?
Superman hurled the Hulk far out into the swampy and uninhabited barrens outside the city, where it couldn't cause any damage.
But why? What could Luthor possibly want?
It's a ploy to create fear. That fear creates lucrative defense contracts. McCarthy's been raising the specter of an alien attack, and now Luthor's built these ridiculous artificial ships to create a planet-wide panic.
He'll demand new weapons to be used against the imminent threat, and he'll promise to save us all. For a price. You were right about it.
I'll break into the broadcasts like Luthor did and send a signal to inform the world of what's actually happening. None of this is real.
Anger built within Kal-El. He had struggled against the public's unreasonable fear of his own alien heritage. He'd been accused of having a secret and sinister agenda. But alien visitors weren't the real evil here. Lex Luthor was. Arms extended, flying swift and hard like a living projectile, Superman punched his way through the hull of another alien ship. Inside the core framework, he grabbed a structural girder and ascended high into the sky. Glad to find a satisfying outlet for his anger, he drove the fake alien ship as far and as fast as he could. Within seconds, he had reached the edge of the atmosphere, and pushing with all his strength, he flung the false invader out toward space. It was incinerated before it could break Earth's atmosphere. On the secret island base, Luthor had seen fit to create a secure holding cell inside the tower of the old Spanish fort connected to his headquarters. The stone-walled chamber had a thick, double-locked door and bars on a window that overlooked the ocean. Moments ago, Lois had seen the phony alien armada launch and could guess what Luthor had in mind. She had to tell the world about the fraud before the great leaders were duped into accepting whatever terms Luthor imposed. She also had to help Superman. She needed to get out right away. She could see no way to pick the heavy locks or pry loose the old iron hinges on the door, so it was going to have to be the window. The bars were slightly above her eye level, but the mortar looked old and crumbling. Maybe she could tug and twist them free. When she reached up to touch the iron bars, though, a powerful electric jolt threw her across the room. Slowly, Lois picked herself up, her pride more injured than her body. Now she saw the naked contact wires connected to each iron bar.
All right, time to figure out a plan B.
She had no superpowers, of course, but she did have her experience and skills as a reporter. Before meeting Superman, she'd extricated herself from plenty of desperate circumstances, and she could do it again. She had to find some way to circumvent the electrified bars. Luthor had left her nothing but a pen and her notepad. Did he expect her to write a last message? A will? Standing on a small wooden bench so she could peer through the barred window, Lois considered her options, racking her brain for a solution. She stared once again at the electrified bars, the wires that made them live contacts. All she had was her pen and a notepad. A metal pen. Clipping the pen's shaft to the spiral binding of the notepad, now she had enough metal to stretch from one naked wire on the electrified bars to the next. Enough to blow out the circuit, she hoped. The pad of paper should provide adequate insulation for her fingers. Maybe. Squeezing her eyes shut, Lois jammed the metal pen across the contact wires at the base of two bars. She jerked her head away, but held the metal contact in place. Sparks showered out, accompanied by an oily smell of electrical burning. Gingerly, she tapped the cell bars with a fingertip, expecting to flinch from another shock, but there wasn't any. The iron rods weren't overly thick or well anchored. Apparently, the electricity was supposed to be the primary deterrent. She twisted the bars, then tugged backward, throwing her whole weight into the effort to break the mortar loose. Finally, the first bar worked free as gray mortar flaked away. She worked double time on the adjacent bars, and within minutes, She had created a gap large enough to worm through. Sweating, she pulled herself up to the thick stone sill, then wriggled her head and shoulders out of the gap. She was at least 50 feet above the ground. The stone blocks of the headquarters tower had been stacked roughly atop one another, mortared together centuries ago. She would have to work her way around to a ledge, lower herself to the next floor, and hope to find another foothold. Her deck shoes should give her enough traction. No matter what, it was better than remaining a guest of Lex Luthor. Now that she had climbed free of her cell, she could see the island's small harbor and two modern speedboats tied up at the dock. If she reached the ground, she could run out to the dock, power up one of the boats, and race westward into the ocean. She would eventually be rescued, she was sure. But she couldn't let Luthor continue with his plans. If the Soviets were still holding Superman prisoner, then she had to do something. Luthor's main control room was two levels down, in the modern portion of the building. With fingertips and toes, she could work her way along the stone blocks of the outer wall and reach one of the lower windows. She would figure out what to do when she got inside. She had already seen Luthor's radio transmitters and microphones. If she managed to gain access, she could send a message, broadcast a warning to the world, even call for help. During the supposed alien invasion, her father would certainly be monitoring the airwaves. She hated to rely on General Lane, but she couldn't do everything herself. Not looking down, she worked her way precariously along the ledge, ignoring the seagulls that swooped around her. Mountain climbers did this sort of thing every day, she told herself. She reached the open window to one of the rooms adjacent to the control center and swung herself inside. By now, her calves burned, her arms ached, and her fingertips were raw, but she was very glad to be on a solid floor again, even if it was inside the lair of Lex Luthor.
Damn it!
Luthor's voice from the next room didn't sound happy at all. Lois looked around the room she was in. Several white clean suits with hoods hung on wall pegs, and Lois slipped into one as an idea rapidly took shape in her mind. She covered most of her head with the hood, tucking her dark hair out of sight, and obscured her face with a set of lab goggles. A clipboard completed her disguise. Looking intent on her duties, she strode brazenly into the control room. Luthor sat in the middle of the controls and screens, watching it all. She had to force herself to keep from staring at the images on the video screens. Huge alien ships hovering over Metropolis. And Superman! He flew alongside a sleek black plane, hurtling forward to engage the invading ships directly above Metropolis. Lois was so overjoyed to see Superman free that she nearly called his name out loud. No wonder Luthor was cursing.
Acquire new targets. Forget the alien ships. There's a new enemy to destroy.
An Air Force squadron of new model Wayne Enterprises attack craft came roaring up behind the Batplane, flying in perfect formation over Metropolis. Without revealing his identity, Batman used the Batplane's communication system to spread a warning throughout the squadron.
The alien ships are fakes. There is no real attack from outer space. Nevertheless, prepare to take out the remaining strange vessels before they can fire their weapons again.
The newly commissioned jets swooped in with amazing maneuverability and opened fire with a suite of targeted rockets. Unlike the flying saucers, however, the death beam projectors atop the Luthor Corp headquarters were indeed real. Now they rotated their dishes and pointed snub-nosed antennae toward the harrying Air Force jets. A barrage of furious heat energy lanced out, striking two of the trailing fighter jets. The pilots didn't have a chance.
Evasive action, we're taking fire!
As the fighters peeled away, Luthor's death beam struck out again and obliterated a third jet.
Those dishes have to be taken out.
The Batplane streaked toward Luthor Corp headquarters, arming another set of missiles. Batman studied his cockpit targeting cross, adjusted the range, and primed the firing systems. He thought of the dead pilots and their families. How many children had Luthor just made fatherless? Did the man even care? Did he count the cost of human lives as just another one of his business expenses? The targeting cross is finally aligned, but the rooftop energy beams discharged first. Batman sent his plane into an evasive spin. The death beam lanced past, missing the aircraft fuselage, but vaporizing the aileron and spoiler on the wing, along with the tip of the vertical stabilizer. Batman fought to maintain control. The energy beam projectors tracked him, aiming once more. If the ray hit him again, the Batplane would be vaporized in the air. In a last desperate move, Batman punched his rocket engine control, but the dark aircraft went into an uncontrolled dive. The flaps still function, but the rudder and elevators in the tail section were useless. The dishes retargeted, pointing directly at him. And this time, he knew he was in their path. But just as another blast struck out, a blue and red blur streaked between the death beam and the bat plane. The energy ray slammed into Superman, crackling all around him like a solar corona. He reeled in the air, but somehow kept himself aloft. Layers of carbon soot covered the bolt S emblazoned on his chest, and his red cape was singed. Out of control, the Batplane plunged toward the skyscrapers of Metropolis. Within seconds, he would crash into the populous heart of the city. His only chance was to eject, to blast himself free and hope he landed intact on the street. The plane still carried armaments and fuel aboard, and through the cockpit canopy, he could see himself careening directly toward the Daily Planet building. He held onto the controls all the way down as he fought to pull up, managing to veer slightly toward the river. He strained, using every functional system, trying backup controls. The last engine failed, and all his cockpit systems shut down. The Batplane was now an aerodynamic black rock, trailing smoke and fire. The sleek aircraft stopped in midair. It simply hung suspended, then began to move away. Batman looked at Superman through the canopy glass.
My turn to rescue you.
In Luther's crowded control chamber, Lois had identified a communications array with a dangling headset and microphone plugged into one of the panels. The rest of Luther's henchmen remained engrossed in the broadcast images of titanic battles against the foe spaceships over Metropolis. Lois didn't think Luther had expected to engage in an actual full-scale war, but it meant to cow the world's leaders by virtue of the threat. The bodyguard Bertram and three companions stood around the edge of the room, encased in their insectile battle suits. No one paid any attention to Lois in her clean suit, hood, and goggles. Clipboard in hand, she pretended to study the readings on various dials and gauges as she worked her way to the communication system.
Damn it! Somebody kill that blasted alien!
On the screens, Lois saw Superman making fast work of Luther's defenses, which meant that Luther was thoroughly preoccupied. When the radio gear was fully powered up, Lois picked up the headset and placed it clumsily over her clean suit hood. Years ago, trying to get a story, she had used a classified military band to tap into Air Force communications. Her audacity had backfired, and she'd gotten into a great deal of trouble. Her father had barely managed to keep her out of federal prison for that particular breach of security. But Lois didn't hesitate a moment now before dialing that frequency.
This is Lois Lane, daughter of General Sam Lane, and reporter for the Daily Planet with an urgent message.
Lady, get off this band! This is a classified military frequency.
Maybe you don't understand the meaning of the word urgent, soldier. I repeat, I am the daughter of General Sam Lane. I'm being held prisoner by Lex Luthor on an island just east of Cuba.
Bertram, stop her!
The alien invasion is a scam. Luthor's behind everything.
The bodyguard was already stalking toward Lois.
Gotta go, soldier.
She ripped off her headset as she dodged an armored fist.
Be careful of the equipment!
Several technicians dodged out of the way as Bertram stomped after Lois. He smashed entirely through a rail, making a straight line toward her. Lois spied a fire extinguisher next to one of the blinking computer banks. She snatched it from its cradle and flung the cylinder with all her strength against the green armor. It didn't make a scratch.
Bertram, you lummox! Catch her, but don't...
Little...
Lois dropped to the floor, and Bertram's armored fist plowed into the control bank and power center.
He missed me.
The gauntlet sank deep into the array.
Damn it! I can't move!
His high-tech armor was frozen up, imprisoning him inside a statue. All the monitor screens in the room went dark, leaving Luther blind and unable to use his energy beams. He stood in a dead control room, as furious as he was helpless. This was all a lot more than Lois had expected to achieve, but when she saw the remaining battle-suited guards advancing quickly toward her, she doubted her celebration would last very long.
Just kill her!
The Batplane was safely landed, but now Batman was out of the fight. With many of the alien ships out of commission and others severely damaged, Superman focused on the real danger now.
Time to put an end to this.
He shot toward the top of the Luther Corp skyscraper, where the beam generator stood like insectile frameworks. Before they could fire again, he furrowed his brow and intensified his heat vision, melting the insulated energy cables. Sparks flew and the support girders bent, but that wasn't good enough for him. Kal-El flew in, arms outstretched, fists clenched, and crashed like a battering ram into the transmitter towers. He ripped apart structural girders, uprooted power cables, and released a shower of lightning. The tower tipped over onto the roof of the Luther Corp building, looking like the skeleton of a beached sea creature. Only then did he pause to assess the situation. Emergency crews and National Guard squads rushed through the streets, mounted ladders, and set up rescue stations to care for the injured inside the damaged buildings. Superman listened to the emergency frequencies.
Lois Lane, daughter of General Sam Lane, and reporter for the Daily Planet with an urgent message.
Lois!
I repeat, I am the daughter of General Sam Lane. I'm being held prisoner by Lex Luthor on an island just east of Cuba.
As he focused his concentration to determine the source of the transmission, all the pieces fell together.
I'm coming, Lois.
Minutes later, Superman scanned the Caribbean islands and keys with a growing sense of urgency, trying to locate the correct one. Lois had ended her transmission so quickly, he knew she had to be in deep trouble. Lois continued to get herself into impossible situations, but this time, she had also exposed Luther's location. In her own way, she was fighting to save the world. He felt very proud of her, and his heart pounded harder as he increased speed. He sped toward a tiny dot of an island in the middle of the blue sea. Sharpening his vision, he saw the outline of the small patch of land, the beaches, industrial areas, docks and shipyards, soot-stained rocket launch pads, and the control center. Modern structures built around the ruins of an old Spanish fort.
She's in there.
He flew down faster than a missile, directly toward the headquarters building. Technicians scattered as Superman dropped down into the control room, landing amid the debris.
You're utterly predictable, you know that? What took you so long?
Luther held a loaded Luger pistol to Lois's head, his other arm holding her firmly around the waist.
I had to finish cleaning up your mess in Metropolis. Put the gun down, Luther. I'm taking you to the authorities.
People should never presume to tell me what to do.
He pressed the gun barrel firmly against Lois's temple.
Ask yourself, Superman, is capturing me worth the price of Miss Lane's life? I really don't want her pretty brains splattered all over my suit, but I can always get a new suit. Finding another Lois Lane may prove a bit more difficult.
Kal-El didn't move. When Lois's eyes met his, he saw something there that gave him strength.
If you're the great genius you claim to be, Luther, then you already know you can't get away.
I still have alternatives.
On cue, three battle-suited guards stalked forward to protect their master, encircling Kal-El.
I designed those suits to match your abilities. Three of them will be more than enough to squash you like a bug. These are my supermen.
The guards raised their gauntlets and shot small explosive rockets at Superman's chest. He staggered backwards so hard into a wall that the cinder blocks crumbled, but the weapons did no damage. Superman strode through the clearing smoke, taking satisfaction in the astonished expressions on the armored bodyguards. They fired their arm cannons, the large caliber bullets bouncing harmlessly up Kal-El's chest. But seeing that a ricochet could easily hit Lois, Superman used a burst of his heat vision to melt the barrels of their inset artillery. When their weapons failed, the guards activated their jetpacks and launched themselves directly at Superman. All three slammed piston-powered blows into Superman from all sides, but all he could see was the pistol pressed against Lois's head. He seized one of the guards by the front of his thick battlesuit and hurled him up through the gaping hole he had left in the ceiling. Kal-El picked up the second man bodily and smashed him into his companion with the force of two colliding trucks. The plated armor may have been impenetrable, but the reverberating impact was enough to knock both men unconscious. Superman turned to face Luther once more.
Not one more step. You know I'll kill her. Don't doubt it for a second.
Please don't hurt me. Please, Lex.
Surprised at her change of tone, Luther glanced at his captive, and Lois stomped down hard with her full weight right into his instep. He instinctively doubled over, and she brought up her knee. Hard. Superman unleashed a burst of heat vision, and the Luger in Luther's hand turned cherry red as Lois ducked free of his grasp.
Don't move.
The Air Force will be here soon, Miss Lane. Your father received your message on the secure military band. I'll wait here until you're safe.
The General won't be happy that I used that frequency again.
It was a matter of national security. I'm sure he'll understand.
You don't know my father.
Well, then I'll put in a good word. How could anyone stay upset with you?
By the time the Air Force jets arrived and a group of paratroopers landed on the island to secure the base, Superman had already done most of the mopping up and locked Luther in one of his own cells. A U.S. Navy destroyer came shortly thereafter, dispatching Marines who quickly fanned out and took up their positions to stand guard over Luther's remaining weapon systems. Finally, Superman handed Luther over to the Marines and watched as they put the scowling man into handcuffs and marched him away to the destroyer's brig.
Good riddance. I've had enough of this island.
I'd be happy to give you a lift back to Metropolis, Miss Lane. Lois, if you'd like to fly with me.
The two stood there awkwardly, not sure what to do next. Then Lois smiled and took his hand.
I'd love to. Oh!
He gently swept her off her feet, holding her close, and the two of them were quickly airborne, flying free and alone in the empty sky. She looked into his bright blue eyes and let herself enjoy being held in his arms again. They never once looked back down as the island vanished below them. When Clark Kent returned from visiting his mother in Kansas, he congratulated Lois on her front page story.
Gee, Lois, it must have been quite an ordeal.
Yeah, good thing Superman was there to save her.
Give me a little credit, Jimmy. Superman and I took more of a team approach. Luther didn't have a chance against the two of us. I'm just glad I helped restore the world's faith in Superman. And now we know what Luther was up to all along.
Now, Lois, I doubt the world really questioned Superman. He's proved himself again and again.
The world has a very short memory, Clark. But there was never a doubt in my mind. Superman's always there when he's needed.
I wish I could have been here myself, but my mom wasn't feeling well and I had to take care of her. In Smallville, we're raised to think that family takes priority. We can't all be Superman, Lois.
Of course, Clark. I wasn't implying anything. Although, now that I think of it, you do seem to be gone every time something exciting happens around here.
Something exciting is always happening in Metropolis, Lois. And the Luther scandal is going to be a story for quite a while.
Luther faced a mountain of charges, thanks in large part to Lois's investigative journalism and all the information she had discovered about his secret island base, his energy beam controls, the murders of many Luther Corp employees, and his plans to dupe the human race. More than 100 people had been killed during the attack of the fake alien battleships on Metropolis, including 5 fighter pilots, and Luther would be held responsible for those murders. But the crimes didn't stop there. He had also been implicated in secret dealings with the Soviets, and the launch of the 3 nuclear missiles had his fingerprints all over it as well. Though the Soviet premier denied all knowledge of a general named Seryodov of the existence of any gulag in the Siberian wasteland, the tapes recovered in Luther's control center told a different story. Once his plan was revealed, Luther didn't even bother to deny his involvement. He wanted to receive credit for his genius in developing the alien propulsion system, the invasion battleships, and the flying saucer prototype that had crashed in Arizona. He even admitted to using his high-powered energy beams to blast Sputnik out of orbit. Altogether, there was more than enough evidence. Luther wasn't going to worm his way out of this one.
So, Mr. Kent, maybe there aren't aliens out there after all. I'm glad the invasion turned out to be a fake, but still, all those stories can't be fake, can they?
Just because one or two stories are hoaxes doesn't mean that all the rest are untrue. After all, it only takes one.
Yeah, you're right. And we know Superman's an alien. There's no denying that.
See, there's always hope.
Is this some newfangled journalism technique? Wait for the news to come to you? Come on, people! Stories don't report themselves. Get out there, hit the streets, find some leads. Is it asking too much for a newspaper to have a headline every day?
He knew the world would never be truly safe. Not from petty thieves who were willing to murder, not from corrupt industrialists who wanted to take over the planet, perhaps not even from the threat of alien invasion. But Earth was secure enough for now. Bruce sat in the cave, still clad in his dark armored suit, the black scalloped cape tucked behind him. Alfred had brought him a club sandwich and small bowl of canned peaches and syrup, a treat he had particularly enjoyed as a boy. Bruce hadn't touched either. He regarded the empty cowl on the desk next to him, the black pointed ears, the empty eye holes of the mask. But the focus of his current study was the faintly glowing green rock sitting in a lab tray, the mineral sample he had taken from Luther's mansion, Superman's Achilles heel. If the story of Kal-El's origin was true, and Bruce had no reason to doubt it anymore, this might indeed be a fragment of the exploded planet Krypton. And through some sympathetic connection, the kind of radiation that primarily targeted someone tied to that planet, even in small doses, this kryptonite weakened Superman. Because of the Gulag's reactor explosion, the entire meteor crater at the Arragusa impact site was gone. All traces of the Siberian kryptonite were almost certainly destroyed. Bruce wondered if the piece here was the only sample Luther had possessed. But nobody else needed to know its power over Superman. He looked at the rock one last time, then sealed it in a new lead-lined case he had specially constructed. He locked the case in a vault carved in the cave's solid rock for safekeeping. He hoped he would never have any reason to use it. Kal-El wanted to measure his limits. He needed to know how far he could go. The atmosphere grew thinner and colder as he flew higher, higher, straining toward the very edge of Earth's atmosphere and beyond. He had never tested himself like this before. The air became vanishingly thin until he just kissed space, where raw and unfiltered sunlight continued to give him strength. He felt as though every skin cell was charging like a battery. He felt no shortness of breath, even here. He was an alien after all. No one had been here to teach him. He had no comrade to give him advice, no other Kryptonian to tell him about his heritage, his strengths and weaknesses. Kal-El simply drifted over Earth, gazing out toward the infinite universe. So many stars, so many planets, so many questions. He focused his telescopic vision, pushing outward into deep space with a resolution greater than that of the best Earth-based telescope. From here he could see the moon with its distant mountain ridges and round craters. He tried to discern any signs of activity, lost cities or alien bases, domed settlements, silver rocket ships, the barest hint of an extraterrestrial civilization. But he saw nothing. He silently asked the universe if he was truly alone, but the universe didn't answer. So he turned back and looked at the blue, green, and white globe turning beneath him. From here, the landmasses showed no political boundaries, no lines delineating countries, no colors that separated communist from capitalist. Kal-El decided he liked this view of Earth the best. He descended swiftly through the atmosphere, cutting through the clouds and soaring over continents, heading back to Metropolis. He wasn't alone, because the people of Earth were his people, and Lois. She could be more than just a friend. He'd like that, and he knew she would as well. He might have been different from them, but all people were different from one another, and yet they all shared a common bond. And Kal-El, Superman, would be there to protect them. Lex Luthor's sensational trial proceeded with great alacrity, an example of swift and effective American justice. The news media loved it. Luthor wasn't the least bit surprised. The little people of the jury took less than an hour to find him guilty, convict him of treason, and sentence him to death. Luthor remained seated, motionless. He didn't rage, didn't curse, didn't make a scene. In his mind, the wheels were already turning, refining his plan to escape.
I believe, Mr. Luthor, that our penal system uses a model of electric chair designed and built by Luthor Corp.
Luthor gave the judge a cold smile.
Well, Your Honor, then I am confident it will work properly.
Kal-El found Batman sitting among the gargoyles on a rooftop in Gotham City. Hunched over, he looked like a gargoyle himself in his black cape and cowl. He directed his intent gaze at the streets, as vigilant as the silent stone sentinels beside him. Drifting down in a swirl of red cape, Kal-El landed right next to him. Batman didn't flinch. His gaze never faltered.
Greed, corruption, jealousy, poverty, even pure evil.
He turned to look at Superman, his eyes darker than the shadows around him.
People will always find reasons to hurt others. And the world will always need men like us.
It's good to know I won't be the only one protecting the innocent and defending against injustice.
Batman frowned,
Even without any sort of superhuman vision, he seemed to see as much as Superman could.
I hope you aren't going to propose a partnership. You're the hero, Superman. I prefer to operate out of the public eye.
We could accomplish more together. We have the same goal, to make the world safer from criminals.
Criminals? The Gotham City Police Department considers me a criminal. But I'm not going to stop what I'm doing simply because I don't fit into one of their neat categories. As long as it's right, I'll keep doing it.
Batman displayed a hint of a smile.
Besides, I don't need a sidekick.
Sidekick? You thought I wanted to be your sidekick?
I said I don't need one.
Neither do I. But we don't always have to operate alone. Sometimes we'll encounter problems large enough to warrant cooperation between us. There's got to be some sort of trust.
Agreed.
And in that spirit, I promise I will never expose your real identity.
Batman turned to him.
I have X-ray vision, remember? I used it before we came to terms. But you can trust me, Bruce. My word is my bond.
I do trust you. And I promise not to reveal the location of your Fortress of Solitude. Or your secret identity, Clark.
This has been a graphic audio production of DC Comics, Enemies and Allies. Copyright 2013 DC Comics. All related characters and elements are trademarks of and copyright DC Comics. Batman created by Bob Kane. Superman created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. By special arrangement with the Jerry Siegel family. Novel written by Kevin J. Anderson. Narrated by Richard Rowan. With performances by James Konacek as Superman, Richard Rowan as Batman, Nanette Savard as Lois Lane, James Keegan as Lex Luthor, Bradley Smith as General Seryodov, Tim Carlin as Perry White, Terrence Azelford as Alfred Pennyworth, Stephen Carpenter as Jimmy Olsen, Faith Potts as Martha Kent, with Gregory Gordon, Matthew Bassett, David Harris, Karen Novak, Michael Glenn, Danny Gavigan, Gary Tells, Thomas Keegan, Margie Tompros, Kimberly Gilbert, Ken Jackson, Nick DePinto, Jonathan Watkins, Elizabeth Jernigan, Evan Casey, Jeff Allen, and Drew Kopas. Directed and adapted for graphic audio by Richard Rowan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Patrick Stratton. Enemies and Allies theme by Thomas Hogan. Additional original music by Thomas Hogan and Dan Sondak. If you enjoyed Enemies and Allies, be sure to look for our other graphic audio comics titles. Available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net.